Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Two big retirements in the National Football League today. One earlier today we all saw. One we're kind of stunned by in the past hour. Antonio Gates of the San Diego / Los Angeles Chargers announced his retirement today at the age of 39. And Luke Kuechly of the Panthers, star middle linebacker, says he's calling it quits. He is just 28 years old. So let's deal with Antonio Gates first before we get to Luke Kuechly. Gates didn't play last year. And it was quite obvious that, okay, I think that if the Chargers had been in contention for a playoff spot, maybe he might have said, hey, Henry gets hurt, I'll come out and play again.
Did he
again.
Want to get paid?
I mean,
that's the question, right? Did he want bigger money than they were willing? Because Hunter Henry missed that first half of the year.
He did, but the thing is, I think after he didn't sign, I knew he was done. But I thought at the end of the year, he's not somebody that wants to sign for the beginning of the year. He'd be somebody that, hey, week six, week seven, I'll get myself into shape and play the last eight games of the season. That's no one wants to retire and come back and play a full 16-game slate. No. I want to come back and play the last seven or eight games and then maybe the playoffs. But by the time it got to the middle of the season, the Chargers were struggling. Gates was done. He didn't play. I'm still not convinced at some point he's going to come back. He's like Keith Van Horn. We're going to hear, oh, someone's going to need someone's contract, so Keith Van Horn is involved.
Gets bounced around,
sure. We're going to eventually. Antonio Gates is never going to retire.
So he's the Undertaker, and he's going to sit up again.
He'll come back. He'll play again in 3 years. The Chargers will call him. Then he'll sit out. He's 42. He'll come back and play again 4 years from now. He'll be 46 years old, still playing. He'll get to the end of Bobby Bonilla's contract with the Mets, and he will still be playing.
Well, as we've talked about Antonio Gates during our runs doing fantasy sports and certainly NFL analysis, lo these many years on Fox Sports Radio, he's the best post-up receiver you've ever seen. Those college basketball days were no joke. I mean, because you want to talk about a guy finding lean and leverage and whatever, going to his 116 career touchdowns. That's what it's all about for Antonio Gates. He was the touchdown maker, Phillip Rivers' security blanket for all those years.
Gates, is for me, he is a first ballot Hall of Famer. I have seen three great tight ends in my life, and Antonio Gates is one of the top two. Rob Gronkowski and Tony Gonzalez. Gonzalez is clearly the best, and talk about athleticism, but Gates is right there with him. And then Gronk, who hasn't played very long, and that kind of gets into the Luke Kuechly argument that we're going to have in a couple minutes. But Gates redefined the tight end position with his athleticism. He played until he was 37 years old, and he was unstoppable. You couldn't stop him one-on-one. You had to put two players on him because he was just that much of a difference maker. And we've said and talked about the career of Phillip Rivers a lot here on the show. And one thing that's always amazing and always amazed me is every time you watch the Chargers play, no matter who their wide receivers are, Phillip Rivers is not threading the football in between a tight window to a guy in a deep out. His receivers are always wide open. His receivers are always like, oh my God, they got 5 yards in that to be. And these are good defensive backs. Now, Rivers, to his credit, has found a way, just like we talked about Joe Burrow last night. Hey, when he gets guys one-on-one, he knows where to put the football. He has that rapport with his wide receivers. That's what he does, because Rivers doesn't have the strongest arm in the world. But that's what he did, because he would find the guys one-on-one, and they would make plays, and they would find a way. I'm coming back to the football on this play. It's very difficult to figure that out when you're a defense and you're stuck with one-on-one coverage. You don't have a lot of Darrell Revises. It's going to be difficult. But why did the wide receiver see so much one-on-one coverage? Because Antonio Gates in the middle of the field was absolutely so dominant, you had to have guys around him. And so you couldn't double guys on the outside. It was too hard, because if you did that, you had one-on-one coverage. And what did Phillip Rivers say today? Anytime I saw Antonio one-on-one, I knew he was getting the football. So teams couldn't do that. You couldn't just cover him with a linebacker. You couldn't just say, okay, well, it's going to be him and the safety will pick him up. You needed to have multiple people on him. You can only put multiple people on so many receivers. So when he's that guy in the middle of the field, of course that's going to leave the outside open. And that's what Phillip Rivers did for 15 years. And he's able able to say, okay, guys like Tyrell Williams or Keenan Allen or Mike Williams, whoever it was, is going to wind up being open. Travis Benjamin, doesn't matter, because it's really hard to cover guys one-on-one when you have a pretty good quarterback who knows where to put the football. And that's the genius and the brilliance of Antonio Gates.
Yeah, see, I always just enjoyed him, especially the last 5 or 6 years when he had that bad toe, bad foot. He looked like he was running in mud, yet he would somehow find a way to, you know, get it just enough space, right? Quick elbow, quick little shove, forearm shiver. Not enough to extend the arm, but enough to back off a defensive player, a linebacker or corner or safety that's trying to cover him, and just enough to get it in. What I ask of you, and I brought this up earlier to Frostburg as we were getting ready for the show, and to you, and I pose it just as a question for the Hall of Fame voters to decide. He did serve a 4-game suspension for PEDs, blaming it on supplements and holistic medicines that he was using to recover from prior injuries.
Yeah, but that's where he's got a great reputation. Everybody loves Antonio Gates. It's gonna be one of those, yeah, well, he had it, so we'll push that out. Other players, no. But that's the thing about having a good reputation. If you have a good reputation, people will look the other way a little bit on your transgressions as long as they're deemed to be minor. Let's face it, PEDs in the NFL, fans don't really care about that. We care more about it in baseball than we do in the National Football
League. No. We laugh more at the testing policies, right? This past week, what was it? Russell Wilson found tags for both PEDs and, you know, and street drugs, I think, were both, if I'm remembering correctly. I mean, guys just start getting tagged all over and it's become a joke. But it's always, you raise it up, particularly this week, since we're talking about rules and integrity of the game and all that when it comes to the Astros, to the Red Sox, Dodgers, and what it meant to their players and everything else. Just raising my hand just to ask the question.
Twitter at How About a Fresca? That's okay. The chair recognizes Mike Harmon.
It's going to be part of the discussion point. That's all.
Mike at Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon. Now, when it comes to Luke Kuechly, Kuechly retiring very surprisingly tonight, made a big statement on social media. Kuechly has had his share of head injuries over the course of the past few years, and at 28 years old, okay, we got a big coaching change coming in. We're going to reboot. It's going to be one more year of Cam Newton. Maybe it's a new quarterback, and Kuechly has decided, I'm going to hang him up. Now, he leaves one of the most decorated linebackers in the game, 5-time All-Pro, 7 or 8, I think he made the Pro Bowl in all the years he was healthy in the NFL.
Seven out of his eight years.
Five all pro
first teams.
He also had I think he has the Panthers record for interceptions. He was a guy that did it all. He was a tackling machine. He was able to make plays in coverage, got to the court. He did everything. But is he going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer? Probably not. Because the standard setters at the position are Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher. I don't think there's anybody arguing that. Ray Lewis played 17 years in the NFL. Brian Urlacher played 13 years in the NFL. Luke Kuechly, as good as he does, he compares great with these guys. Look, all the middle linebackers are great middle linebackers Luke Kuechly compares well with, but all these big Hall of Famers, they all played much longer. Now, when the NFL let Terrell Davis in after basically having 4 years and winning 2 Super Bowls, that really, you know, brought the level down a bit as far as how long you had to play. But his level of dominance got him in. That could do it for Kuechly. But first ballot, I don't see that for him, just because 8 years is not quite the monster careers and the monster years that Lewis and Urlacher both had. And can you say Luke Kuechly was as good as these two? No, he wasn't. As good as he wasn't quite the difference maker of Ray Lewis and Brian Urlacher. But was he fantastic? Will he get in? Yeah, but first ballot, the year with Antonio Gates, I don't see him getting in.
What'll be interesting to watch is, because you got both Patrick Willis and Luke Kuechly, whose careers are very similar, right? Done after 8 years, with Patrick Willis only 6 games played his final season. We all remember sitting here on a Thursday night watching the Kuechly injury, tears streaming out of his eyes, and we're all looking at each other going, wow, that's it. I mean, that could have been the last we see him on a field, and here we are, another early retirement. When you go to the Urlacher comparison, you're talking about Urlacher 13 years versus his 8, about 200 tackles difference between them when you talk about that kind of impact overall. 31 quarterback hits that he's credited with, Kuechly, against, well, You're talking 24 for Urlacher in terms of stats that mm-hmm. they keep, and some of those, you know, you're always wondering because tackles is also an unofficial stat. So
sure.
Both the Carolina and Chicago folks did their guys right at the linebacker. You're around the pile, you get a half, and you get a half, and you get a half. But I didn't play today.
You still had eight tackles today.
But you mentioned Gates' reputation. That's where Luke Kuechly.
He's got a great reputation.
Well,
true.
Right. So I mean, that's one of the things that's certainly going to help him as we go through. And it's always the question of the log jam or when we have the next bulk insertion to the Hall of Fame. I do appreciate this. A laugh perhaps you missed. Rob Gronkowski, congrats, Luke Kuechly, on early retirement. You were a fearless player out there on the field. So, when you coming back?
Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike at Swollen Dome, the Jason Smith Show with my best friend Mike Harmon. Again, Patrick Willis, you talked about him. Very similar career to Luke Kuechly, but for me, the length of a career is a very big deal. And when you look at the who's in at the top of that list, guys playing that long.
Yeah, the all decade guys. That's the thing that jumps in.
Really, Kuechly? You couldn't give Gates his one damn day?
Oh, how about that?
Really?
If he's retiring on social media, he could have done it tomorrow. You could have done it tomorrow.
I'm happy for you. You're doing what you want to do. But really, you couldn't just do it tomorrow?
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a lot going on. I mean, Major League Baseball tried to sneak in the whole Astros thing tomorrow on national title game, thinking they'd get away with it.
Today's Gates Day.
He's a definitive first ballot Hall of Famer.
I mean, and Urlacher got in even with hair.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. He changed his whole look.
But what does the bust have hair or not have hair?
I don't think it does.
Okay.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joining us now on the hotline, a man who has just completed 15,000 words on Syracuse's upset of Virginia from Saturday, CBS Sports NFL insider extraordinaire Jason Lockenfora. What's happening, Jay?
What's going on, guys?
I mean, you must be tired. Your hands typing from that. You got the big lacrosse previews. You had your work.
Yeah.
I know you're a busy
guy.
Yeah, I'm all over it.
I'm all over it. I did see, though, that they tore down the Daily Orange.
Yeah, they did.
I don't know why. Do you know the backstory of that? I don't really know why. It just kind of flashed across my Twitter feed, but I don't know if the school bought it, I guess. I have no idea. But
well, I think Otto the Orange is going to be in charge of the daily newspaper now for Syracuse. I think
he was a hell of a copy editor back in the day.
Hey, so before we get to the games, let's start saying we have two big retirements in the NFL. Antonio Gates calls it quits. He didn't play last year. And Luke Kuechly, a surprising announcement at age 28 after 8 seasons in the NFL. You know, these guys are both Hall of Famers. I think Gates is first ballot. Kuechly might have to wait. He only played 8 years. You know, where are you on this news from today with these guys?
Yeah, I think they're both Hall of Famers, without a doubt. I wonder, I don't even want to get into the minutiae of my, you know, Hall of Fame voting in the NFL and the problems I have with it, but there's so many guys who caught so many balls I don't know if there's going to end up being a backlog of tight ends the way there's a backlog of receivers. But for me, Kuechly, I mean, look, 8 years doing what he did, knocking heads for a living, is plenty long enough. And you know, for me, he was a shoo-in on the all-decade team. This is a guy who affected the run game, affected the pass game, was an incredible leader, got others around him to sort of rise above and buy into something bigger than themselves. I mean, he was beloved by the guys he played with and beloved by the guys he played against and had immense respect around the league. So, obviously, you know, his concussion issues are well documented, and he knows his body and his mind better than anybody else. And if he just got through the rigors of a season and felt like he may have dodged a bullet or two, and you know what I mean? And whatever, you know, a lot of life to live, hopefully, for a guy who's 28. And this isn't, you know, I don't know that we should be calling these early retirements or saying, you know, it's a surprise anymore, because we know the risk of playing football. If at any point the mental calculus for any individual is, I don't want to do that anymore, you know what I mean? Because of future health and safety, because of how I feel right now, because of the risks involved, then, you know, I think you have to respect it. And this is not, you know, a fluke or an anomaly. A lot of young men are coming to these decisions, and I don't know that we as outsiders should be saying, well, that guy retired too soon, or that guy retired quote unquote early. No, he retired when he was ready to retire.
All right, Jason. Now we've had the coaching carousel is now stopped. We can move on. The last one to join the fray, Kevin Stefanski, saying all the right things. Sky's the limit for Baker Mayfield. Is he the guy to change the culture in Cleveland?
I don't know, man. You know, it's not just the coach himself. It's who's he working for? Problem. Who's he working with? Potentially a problem, you know. What is this staff going to look like? Who's helping him pick the staff? How much say are the analytics guys having in picking a staff? And I'm completely progressive when it comes to numbers and advanced data and metrics. But I think when we start talking about position coaches and offensive coordinators, that may be a little out of Paul DePodesta's depth. I don't know. But whatever they've touched there hasn't worked. And I think Kevin Stefanski has a lot going for him. He's been on my radar for a while. A lot of people I know and respect who know him very well speak very highly of him. But he's coming into a very charged situation where they've been running over inexperienced head coaches for multiple decades, going back to Mike Patton. And why this owner in particular keeps hiring the same archetype, by and large. And I know Hugh Jackson had 1 year as a head coach in Oakland, but it's not like Hugh Jackson had real head coaching chops. He keeps hiring NFL coordinators over and over and over. And right now, Stefanski is walking into a cauldron where the quarterback's been overempowered. There's a lot of big characters and quirky personalities that John Dorsey brought in there, and that's Dorsey's way, but Dorsey's not there anymore, and it's Kevin Stefanski's problem now. And I don't know who his bad cop is, but he better have a couple of bad cops there who are willing to lay down the law and set some guardrails and what's acceptable and what's not, and people need to know that there's real consequences. I don't know that Kevin Stefanski at age 38 can walk in there and do that himself. And picking players has been a problem there forever as well. So, Godspeed. I'm rooting for him, but it's an uphill climb.
So, the fact that Josh McDaniels took all the interviews, didn't get any jobs. He looked like he was ticketed for the Browns job, but it wasn't a real match. Does him not taking a job and going back to the Patriots, does this have anything to do with Tom Brady, his status, what he might decide?
No, I mean, you know, timing did not work out for Josh. His agents, you know, didn't get him in front of Carolina before they got their other client, Matt Rhule, in front of Carolina. And I think David Tepper was going to, well, I don't think, David Tepper was going to hire the first coach he truly fell in love with and he felt shared his vision. And had he met with Josh McDaniels first, I strongly believe, based on what I knew they felt of McDaniels going into that interview, that he would have hired McDaniels 12 hours later. But, you know, he fell in love with Rhule, and Rhule had other options, and so, you know, money and term of the contract was no object for him. You know, Josh, under the paradigm I just spoke about in Cleveland, where you've got a baseball executive basically running the organization by proxy from his laptop in La Jolla, California, that wasn't going to fly for Josh. Like, that was never going to happen. He took the interview because you got it. He's not in a position to be saying no, and you want to hear people out. But I think both sides knew that unless Jimmy Haslam was willing to go with a different management model, that Josh wasn't going to be a fit there. And everybody also knew that DePodesta wanted to hire Kevin Stefanski last year when the owners, you know, the three owners, and Dorsey picked Kitchens instead. So I think that, you know, unless Kevin Stefanski had a horrible interview, he was probably going to get that job. And Kevin Stefanski's too bright and prepared, and he just went through the process with them last year to have a horrible interview. Keeping Josh McDaniels, does that help the New England Patriots make a pitch to Tom Brady? It does, but the Patriots better realize that they need to re-recruit Tom Brady.
Fox Sports Radio, Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon from the Geico Studios. On the hotline with us, CBS Sports NFL reporter, insider, our buddy Jason Lockenfora. Find him on Twitter, at Jason Lockenfora. Jason, you mentioned Matt Rhule a little bit earlier, and I got to be honest, the hiring today of a new man to his staff, I was hoping he'd end up in the AFC East so there'd still be a Brady to torment Smith forever. Joe Brady goes to Carolina. What's it mean for Cam Newton, and how's this offense going to look?
Hey, well, if Joe Brady keeps doing what he did At LSU, he might end up as the AFC East as a head coach, so don't rule that out. The rise for these quarterback guys can be pretty fast. I'm excited by the move. I think Matt Rule is going to have a pretty interesting hybrid mix on his staff of college and pro guys. And Brady basically took the best of what Sean Payton does, which it's easy to steal from a master. It's knowing then how to apply what you've learned in the heat of the moment. It's utilizing it in game, and he obviously showed an ability to scheme people open and really take Joe Burrow's game to another level. You know, you said for Cam Newton, I mean, I don't know. Is it Cam Newton? I mean, could it be Teddy Bridgewater, who Brady worked with in New Orleans, if they decide that, you know what, you know, maybe we could move on from Cam and get a guy who's a little younger, you know, I guess you look at it both ways. I mean, he's young to begin with, 26, and play, in terms of his body, because of how much time he missed and, you know, how long he's been a backup, he's probably, from a body standpoint and coming back from that horrific knee injury, he's probably more like a 23-year-old. So, you know, will that resonate with them? And the other thing about this staff is Matt Rhule having a bunch of college guys on his staff. They're going to know the kids in these next couple of drafts inside out. They would have recruited a lot of them. They'd have been in their parents' house. They'll know them as individuals. They'll know their makeup. They'll talk to their high school coaches. It won't be, you know, sort of the surface level that most NFL coaches would know college prospects. So there might be some diamonds in the rough at the quarterback position who they're really high on, you know, from their experience at Baylor.
So, Jay, speaking of quarterbacks, are you happy for Joe Burrow? He's going to go number one overall. Are you concerned that he's going to be a Bengal?
Well, I mean, we have the AFC package at CBS, and it would be really cool.
That's right.
We've got all these emerging young quarterbacks. You know, you've got Lamar, and you've got Mahomes, and, you know, Sam Darnold from week to week looks like he might make the step up. Can Baker Mayfield get it going in year three? I mean, that's an interesting division. If you've got Lamar, Baker Mayfield, and then Joe Burrow. And, they've got Joe Mixon. I know the Bengals were a wreck this year, but the left tackle at Alabama will be back, and you know that's a pretty good starting point. One of the offensive linemen they've drafted the last few years has to be half decent. They might be crazy enough to franchise A.J. Green because they have Burrow. You know, could Ross ever stay healthy? I don't know, but Boyd's a pretty good receiver. If they invest in the offensive line, I think they can make major gains quickly offensively. You know, defensively, it's probably going to take some time, and they've gotten long in the tooth at some key spots there. Could Joe Burrow take them from one win to 5 or 6 next year? I don't think that would be the craziest thing in the world based on what else they do in the offseason.
Jason, you're there on the ground in Baltimore. I mean, what are you doing in the community to help people get past this past weekend? And
I'm going around with plastic bags collecting tears.
You could solve a lot of water issues with that after that. But the local consensus of Lamar, are they wavering? What's the feel there?
No, I don't really. Locally, there's a lot of heat on Greg Roman, and I think educated fans who watch that game, justifiably so. I mean, on a day where, look, guys are dropping balls left and right, and Lamar in the first half was sort of too amped up again. Some of his mechanics were wavering, throwing some fluttery balls. But I mean, the first drive ends on an interception on a ball that Mark Andrews caught about 25 times this year, and he's banged up and he doesn't quite high point it. Lamar needed some help, and Greg Roman decided down one score to start going 5 wide empty set on a team that has no wide receivers, and they run 92 plays of offense. The fullback only played 7 snaps. I mean, they're worried about Ingram's injury. Gus Edwards comes out of the chute, looks like a house of fire. He didn't even play 20% of the snaps. They got completely away from the mesh point RPO game. They just abandoned their identity and were chucking it all over the place. Lamar dropped back 70 times.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It was kind of seismic. And I wrote a column today. You know, I look back at that. You look back at the Bills with Brian Daboll, another guy who was up for a head coaching job. And sometimes these coordinators get too cute when the world's watching and their prospective new owner's watching. I mean, Buffalo ran 35 plays for 92 net yards after getting a 16-0 lead. They're running for 6 yards a carry, and they throw twice as much as they run. Josh McDaniels, the week before, you know, that same weekend with New England, I mean, they had 300 total yards. They had no plays over 20 79 yards. Now, I know they were limited all year, but that could have been Tom Brady's last game, you know, with the Patriots. And then Greg Roman crapped out, and Kevin Stefanski, they averaged 3.6 yards per passing.
Head coach of your Cleveland Browns.
And he got the job. I mean, so I do think that's real. Human nature, I mean, you can try to block that stuff out, but you got friends and family, you're getting the job, and you know the owners are watching, and the whole league's watching, and you're the only game being played. And I do think it got to Greg Roman.
All right, hey, Jay, real quick, 10 seconds. When we talk to you next week, we're talking about what two teams in the Super Bowl?
KC and San Fran.
There we go. I like that pick. I like that pick. Jason Lockenfora, you can follow him on Twitter at Jason Lockenfora. And for a history of Otto the Orange as well, he's got that coming up. Jay, as always, my friend, appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it. I got a busy offseason, apparently. That was good.
Go get it, buddy. See ya.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
The order of the day, and really the order of the last 2 days, interrupted by LSU and Clemson last night, has been the cheating scandal that has rocked Major League Baseball, as the Houston Astros, after Rob Manfred's investigation was completed, were found to have been guilty of stealing signs electronically in the 2017 season, a very sophisticated form where they would electronically, they would get the signals in the center field stands and relay that to the dugout, relay that to just outside the dugout, where a staffer or someone would sit near a drum and pound it to let the batter know that it was either a fastball or an off-speed pitch that was coming. Sometimes it was whistling, and this was just an absolute bombshell that was dropped on baseball. AJ Hinch was suspended, so was Jeff Luhnow of the Astros, the GM. Then they were both fired by the Astros. They want to move on. This is a huge controversy that's going to envelop the league. Alex Cora, who was a bench coach for the Astros in 2017, was named as the ringleader of the operation. It was his idea. He's the one that's keeping track of everything and making sure the signals are relayed from center field to the guy eating peanut shells, sitting outside the dugout, banging on the trash can. And as a result, he is now the ex-manager of the Boston Red Sox, as he and the Red Sox have agreed to, quote, part ways in the wake of this controversy. And this is why Rob Manfred blew it by not taking the World Series away from the Astros. Because none of this is enough. There is not one person that thinks this is enough punishment for the Astros. The Astros cheated their way to a World Series. And you have a litany of teams who are ready to say, whoa, you did not beat us fair and square. The Dodgers, they're going to have two World Series parades because they lost to the Astros. Then they lost to the Red Sox, who Alex Cora was managing in 2018 when they won. The Yankees are upset. Everybody that the Astros played, the AL West is upset. Teams are extreme. It's like a class action lawsuit. I'm upset. I want MLB to investigate the Royals that they were stealing signs in 2015. And the Mets get the World Series. I mean, this is how big it is. And all that the punishments did for Rob Manfred was push forefront the argument to let Pete Rose and all the other cheaters like Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens into the Hall of Fame. Well, if you let these guys cheat and there's no punishment for them because there was no punishment for the players, then how can you keep Pete Rose and all these guys out? This completely got out of Rob Manfred's control because he did not want, I'm going to be the commissioner that took the World Series away from a team, to be the number one line on his resume and his legacy. That's the only reason why. Anybody else that was strong enough as a commissioner would say, hey, I'm sorry, I'm going to have this job for a long time. I'm taking the World Series away from you. Now, and you're forfeiting that because you were found to have cheated in that season. And if Rob Manfred had the guts, he would have done it. But I don't want that to be it. I don't want Rob Manfred, who most famously took the World Series away from the Houston Astros, he did not want that. And that's the reason why he thought, I'm coming down hard enough with these punishments, but not realizing what the reaction was going to be, not having the foresight to know, oh boy, this is just going to piss people off. This is why we sit where we are right now.
Well, you go to, I mean, first off, Baseball Hall of Fame, it's a separate entity. So that's writers and that's run independent of Major League Baseball, obviously.
Right, no, but that brought up the conversation you didn't think it was going to spark was, oh, now we got to let Pete Rose and these guys in the Hall of Fame? Wait a minute.
Pete Rose,
because I went lighter on the suspension.
Yeah, Pete Rose is in his own little box. And I think this year you're going to start seeing more guys get into the Hall, at least from the early results of the polling of the hundreds of guys that, and women that have votes, that the potential is there that more players get in. Because I think there's the expectation and a little soul searching of, well, one, you got no positive test, regardless of what happened to the size of hats and batting helmets and the ping pong balls flying out of major league ballparks and band boxes across. You got a number of guys that you went after hard, but you didn't find anything in proof, right? A lot of allegation. And that's what you have. Here, you've got the goods, right? You've got everything on them. You've got Alex Cora because he was the guy that left the organization from Mike Fiers. He became the easy guy to point out. And people celebrated saying, look, Rob Manfred, this was a great day for baseball. No, what? A strongly worded letter? $5 million is nothing, right? We saw reports yesterday. The economic impact of the World Series victory was over $60 million. Say nothing of player contracts and everything else.
That's what people think the money. No one cares about how much you're fighting. No one cares about the money.
But it's part of the circumstance, because you also have guys whose legacies are killed forever. I mean, Dave Roberts spent a year on the hot seat. He had a World Series title. He gets to sit on his ass for
two World Series titles.
Well, just give him the first one.
Kershaw's legacy was altered.
Okay. Right. But I mean, look, not that he's been fantastic in World Series situations.
Kershaw would be the most clutch pitcher in history of baseball.
But we don't
have the lead twice in Game 5.
But we wouldn't have gotten to where it's become, right? Look, they win, maybe they win, maybe they don't. But the reality is, when you come down with this kind of thing, it's more the $5 million. You didn't take anything from their international pool of players. No players got punished. They're all complicit.
The players need to be punished. The players need to be punished. You need to find the players who needed to be punished. And instead, you said, I'm going to go heavy on the people in charge, and that's going to put this to bed. If I suspend a GM and a manager for a year who are probably going to fire those guys, that's going to be big enough. And he completely misread the room. He misread what the reaction was going to be. And that's the thing, is that you can get a lot of controversy surrounding sports, and you will find a way to have people split on it. And when something is split, you can see the controversy go away. But cheating in sports is still at the forefront of many people. Any part, Middle America, East Coast, West Coast, cheating to and going over the top to cheat, nobody likes that. And if you don't come down hard enough, everybody's going to hate it. And that's one, he completely miscalculated the impact of what his punishment was going to be.
Your cost of a World Series was $5 million and two executives. You made a lot of money, and that doesn't go away? That's a clown show.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Joining us on the hotline, no one better to talk to. Fox Sports, MLB Network, baseball insider John Paul Morosi. JP, not what I thought we'd be calling to talk about at this point in time, but this is what the news cycle brings us.
Well, Happy New Year to both of you, nonetheless, and it really is a remarkable statement to say that now the teams that have accounted for the last three American League pennants are now all looking for a new manager. Both those teams, the Red Sox and Astros, here a month before spring training, just really speaks to the unprecedented nature of this situation the baseball is in, really all the way around.
So let me just start here. If the beginning of this story was yesterday, when the penalties were announced, and now we are today with Alex Cora, if 0% was where we started and 100% is where we're going to end when we finally put the Astro cheating scandal to bed, what percentage of the story have we heard so far?
An excellent question, and if we're going to use the parallel to the PED era, which I think is apt in many ways, here we are all these years later, and we're still talking about it, right? In one way or another, the steroid era through the Hall of Fame is certainly part of the conversation. This week has the chance to affect the game for years to come, and maybe even more than a decade. Not necessarily on an everyday basis, but the legacies of the players involved will keep coming back up to your mind, and you'll wonder what percentage of it was quote unquote real, what percentage of it was artificial in the sense of numbers that were achieved based on information that they possessed that was not fair. And we don't know, certainly in a global context, how many other teams, how many other players were guilty of similar misdeeds of stealing signs using technology. And again, much like the steroid era, we're probably never going to have all that information. We just have to, I think, as a sport, and I think that MLB has taken a very good step this week, showing just how seriously the commissioner's office regards these violations, and I think there's obviously a tremendous disincentive for others to try it moving forward. But if you were to ask what are the odds of another team being mentioned in the next year with evidence brought forth, we have to say that remembering back, reportedly the Astros made the point at the initial outset of the individual that they had stationed next to the dugout in the 2018 playoffs. The purpose of that person being there was to try to catch other teams who were cheating. And at the time, I believe a half dozen or so was the number that was cited in media reports at the time of being what the Astros suspected other teams were doing at that point in time, that many other clubs. So, guys, it's a difficult story for baseball to wade through because, to your point, Jason, what we simply do not know where the other bank of this river truly is. It is very foggy, and it is not yet clear.
See, JP, as we do the math, and I mean, you got a couple of guys that lose a job. I get it. For an ownership, $5 million, couple of draft picks, you get to keep your international pool. I say they went off pretty light. Nobody, no player faces any kind of retribution for this. All it is hints and whispers. You shrug and you move on.
Well, I would disagree there. I guess first and foremost, the $5 million fine is the most that is allowable under baseball rules to sanction any particular team.
He made 60, though.
But that's the maximum. If they wanted to fine him $5 million and $1, they couldn't have done it. Okay, they got to the very maximum level that they could go. First and foremost, I think on the conversation, I know it's a popular one in Los Angeles right now, should they have to vacate a championship? I simply don't think that is something that you could do, because then you have to start to reverse engineer the entire steroid era, who might have won a certain championship in a given year. Was anybody else on the other side of any of these championships over the last three decades in which there may have been PED involvement? Was anybody else on the opposite team involved at all in PEDs? It's a very untenable position to put someone in to ask the commissioner to do that. And I think regarding players, there are two different reasons for this. Number one is the commissioner came out and said in 2017, I am holding the field manager and general manager responsible for adhering to the rules that were set forth that fall regarding the Apple Watch that came out with the Boston Red Sox. He put that on the management, okay? That's first and foremost. The second part is, as a practical matter, if you suspended players that many, all those that were potentially involved and guilty here, first of all, the union would grieve it, and second of all, how many Astros are then left, okay, to play the season ahead? I mean, it really is a remarkably prevalent scenario based on what was known and who knew it was going on. Apart from actually participating in it, who knew about it? One had to assume a very substantial percentage of the team. So it's a tremendously difficult a penalty to legislate. I think the commissioner did quite a good job of doing it under very difficult circumstances.
All right, so let's take this, the next part now. The Astros part ways with A.J. Hinch. The Red Sox part ways with Alex Cora. Who are we going to see take those jobs?
Well, again, another key question, and the question is, as well, which teams would even permit their field staff members to interview for these positions this close to the start of the season? You've already had meetings about spring training. I do think, though, that given the nature of what has transpired here, MLB should encourage their member clubs that if a bench coach or a third base coach or a hitting coach, pitching coach is being requested to interview, I think it's important to let those people do it. So one name to mention right here, Matt Quatraro, who did a very good job with the Tampa Bay Rays on their coaching staff at the Major League level, and also interviewed at least one other job during the course of the winter and interviewed very well, he would be a good candidate in Boston because of the familiarity there between him and Chaim Bloom, the new chief baseball officer there in Boston, who, of course, had come from Tampa Bay. Watch that name. But in terms of the two names that we know well in this game that I think in the back of my mind maybe this would be a good fit for them, just given their experience, Bruce Bochy, Dusty Baker. And I think they both have a great reputation as being players' managers who do a good job of lowering the temperature in the room. When things get hot, when there's a lot of pressure on, they do a very good job of helping people feel comfortable with themselves. And I think both of these teams need a lot of that right now. They're both still very good teams, especially in the case of the Astros. And I think it's simply a matter of bringing in someone, unless you feel like you can really promote from within, bringing in somebody who you trust to just steer the ship during what's the difficult year. Maybe it is just a one-year assignment, but I think for Dusty Baker and Bruce Bochy, there would be appeal given these two organizations, these two rosters, to bring in two veteran managers. Bochy is going to the Hall of Fame, who could potentially navigate the very choppy waters of the 2020 season for these two franchises.
All right, now the other managerial domino yet to fall, because you know the Mets were going to find their way into it. Carlos Beltran, who was named in the report, one of only two people named in, besides he and Alex Cora. Mets have not said anything. Does Carlos Beltran manage the Mets this year, or do the Mets say, listen, we have to move on from you, this is too big a scandal?
I think Beltran manages the Mets. I do, because, again, part of it is he is not going to be disciplined at all through the MLB process based on what we saw. The Mets, and perhaps if they have any issues with it, with the situation, they would say, was Beltran fully accountable and forthright in what they told him during the interview process? We don't know that information, to be honest with you. We're not sure. Where all the information was at the time and what he was sharing with the Mets at that point. But I think he is going to be safe. I really do. There may be some pressure on the Mets to do otherwise, but under MLB law, he is now treated as the player, which meant he's not going to be penalized for it. And I really have a hard time seeing the Mets moving on from him in that particular setting. Of course, it is worth pointing out, Brody Van Wagenen, who hired Beltran, very close with A.J. Hinch. So Brody and A.J. know each other very well. I'm sure in the process of just vetting out the information that there would have been a conversation between Brody and A.J. about Carlos, and obviously the report back from A.J. to Brody was strong enough, or the recommendation strong enough, that the hire was made. So it really is a multi-layered question, but I do believe that Carlos Beltran will be the manager of the Mets on opening day.
There you go. You made Jason happy. His punishment is manager of the Mets.
Wait. Baseball just brought in JP. Wait, you might want to write some words on this. Baseball has just punished Carlos Beltran. They have extended his contract with the Mets for 4 more years.
So that's not going to be that bad. I really don't think it's going to be that bad of an experience to manage a team that has Jacob DeGrom, that has Noah Syndergaard, that has Marcus Stroman, that has Pete Alonso coming off the rookie home run record. It's going to be a great year in Flushing in 2020. I can assure you of that.
Well, and he's playing with house money because he got to skate on any discipline off of this. So, I mean, he gets to just manage off the seat of his pants. Who cares? Josh Donaldson, a 4-year deal with Minnesota after the redemptive year in Atlanta. I mean, that strong lineup. They hit a lot of home runs. They added another guy. What do they add here?
Well, they were trying for a lot of the winter guys to find a way to upgrade the rotation. Could not do that really in a big, meaningful way. They wanted Wheeler, they wanted Bumgarner, couldn't get either one. They're just going to try to outslug teams. We're going to see some 10-8 games and some 12-10 games in that beautiful ballpark there in one of the great cities in our country there, Minneapolis, here in 2020. But I've got some questions about their rotation and their bullpen too. And you look at the White Sox getting better and better, and oh by the way, at the same time, the Donaldson signing means that we could now see some clarity on the trade market for Nolan Arenado and also for Chris Bryant. I do think Arenado gets moved. I really do. The Cardinals have been mentioned very heavily, as have the Rangers. The White Sox maybe on the periphery there as well. But I do think that even if the Braves do not step up, and they should, by the way, to make a move for Arenado or Bryant, still a decent chance that one or both of them is moved to a club like potentially the White Sox, the Cardinals, or the Rangers.
You can follow him on Twitter at John Morosi. That's at John Morosi. JP, as always, my friend, appreciate your time with us. And when the Mets fire Beltran, we'll call you back.
Well, I hope it doesn't happen. And I hope there's a better day ahead for the game that we can visit on. But, yes, always love talking with you both, no matter what the circumstances. And I did, you know, I tell you what, Michigan basketball, great start under Juwan. I am still a believer they're going to make the tournament, have a very good second half there in Big Ten play.
Hey, you're a basketball school now, so you're okay.
Basketball school. We've talked about that before, my friends. You're exactly right.
Take it easy, JP. We'll talk to you soon, my friend.
My pleasure, guys. Thank you.
See you, buddy.